Welcome to another episode of the Evo India podcast. In the studio with me today, I've got Adil Jal Darukhanawala, or Adil Sir, as I call him. And we're talking about something really interesting. We're going to be talking about roads. And the conversation started because of the new Atal Setu that was recently inaugurated, the Trans Harbour
Link,
which is connecting the heart of Mumbai to the outskirts of Panvel, right out of the city. And it's something that should aid connectivity, aid efficiency, and just make travel from outside the city to inside it much quicker. Adil sir, what do you think of this new Atal Setu?
Couple of things. It's very welcome, number one. But it'll be really very welcome when the correct link from the Panvel side of things is there to the Pune-Bombay Expressway. That's still wishy-washy and all here or there, and it's still not on.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, like, this entire thing where we have got this electric car syndrome that we need to reduce pollution in the cities, so we have electricity by coal-fired plants outside the city, sending it across over there. So there still is a misnomer. So unless and until that connectivity portion at the entry and exit points at Panvel is done, this will just remain a great sort of a drive sort of thing, not really connecting it to it. So I think we need to get that sorted out first and foremost.
Okay.
Second thing, this Trans Harbour Link was actually envisaged as far back as 1960 by none other than G.R.D. Tata. And he had done everything proper, planned it, the Tata Group had planned it, and they wanted to build the entire thing. And in those days, every decision was taken in Delhi, and it was presented proper. And you know, the Tatas are thorough in all these things, and they had the country's interests at heart, so they did all that stuff. But then they said, who will take the credit? Tata said, we just want to do it. So as usual, so much of obfuscation in the minds of the people in power there. It never happened. It was again represented to Indira Gandhi, who had taken a far more, flexible view of it and said, yes, let's do it. And then it was thought that this thing would be named after the Tata Group. But Indira Gandhi said, let's name it after Nehru. So JRD said, we are not even charging any money for it. So as usual, on the stupidest of things, the political dispensation never did what was right for the country. They were only trying to do right for what they wanted for their own legacy or whatever. I'm not getting into, but this was the true essence of things. Country has paid a big price from 1960 to 2024. Just do the maths. It is 64 years we have suffered.
The and geography of Mumbai would be different if...
So, we have suffered from that time. And this is but one instance. There were so many other roads, so-called roads, built on paper, monies disbursed, opened up also, and there were never any roads. So, history has showed that wherever roads are made, communities thrive, commerce prospers, connectivity with other like-minded people from other geographical areas where the road passes through. A lot happens for the benefit of mankind. Here, we want it to benefit political kind in certain ways. That's why. So what has happened with the Atal Setu was, with so many things happening, these things were done on a war footing. And finally, it's a question that we need... We are exulting that, oh, we got Atal Setu right now. Damn it, other countries have done 10 Atal Setus in the last 5 years here. So, a nation of the heft, size, strength of India, we are a race which, again, it shows in so many ways. We celebrate one instance and think we are world beaters. No, we cannot rest on our laurels.
Fair enough. I love that you went into the history of the Atal Setu. Very interesting. And I didn't even know that much. I'd heard that it was proposed long ago, but I didn't know the details. You know about the history of the roads much more than all of us do. Could you enlighten us on some of the projects that were instrumental in making our country?
No, so before we go there, let's understand one very important thing about roads globally. Yeah. If you care to see about who were the first road builders in the world, in that sort of sense, the Romans were the first road builders in the world. And before that, you also had Hannibal, who to move his armies from North Africa across the Alps to get across to the Greeks and whatnot. He built roads for the elephants and his cavalry and whatnot. They were cobbled roads, so with stones placed across. Those roads still survive to this day. So it showed how much roads were important even then when we didn't have cars. The wheel was invented. So the bullock carts and everything else could be pulled across. But roads were built of those big stones and whatnot. So that was one area. And there are those Roman roads still join so many places in Europe. So, and Europe developed because of roads. You think about also in our part of the world. We had, India was a loose confederation of many kingdoms at that time. Or rather, forget about India alone. Central Asia and Southeast Asia was just like that. And still trade happened. Why did it happen? Because of the caravanserais roads and whatnot. So the Grand Trunk Road, which is the first known road which joined communities from, say, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, what is present-day Pakistan, which is ours actually, it was undivided India. And it went all the way to Burma, which was also part of India. The Grand Trunk Roads today still exist. And that is where most of our road and our civilization has developed. As you can see, still you go in the Punjab or in Uttar Pradesh, you'll see communities have developed on either side of the road. So towns are built like that, and then the towns spread across. Even Pune was like that. Pune was divided in the 1800s by the river. So on one side of the river was the Peshwa and the Marathas, and the other side of the river was the cantonment which the British had built. And then there was a road joining the two. So roads do join communities. Road do join livelihoods. These things needed to be done. We had the first flush of liberalization in the 90s. All of a sudden, the things opened up. You wanted connectivity and you wanted connectivity quickly between two cities, three cities, four cities. Take just the case of the Bombay-Pune highway at that time. It was a two-lane road at best. Yeah. More often than not, it was one and a half lane. And if we got caught, God forbid, an accident happened, we'd have a log jam, which would extend to 18, 24, 36 hours. Yeah. I've been stuck once.
Can you tell us some stories?
At that time, connectivity, air connectivity from Pune to other places was not that good. So once I had to go to Delhi for when I was doing Car and Bike International magazine. And my flight was from Bombay. So I said, okay, let's give it 6 hours and then add another 2 hours for Bombay airport. I was stuck there for 24, 25 hours.
Wow.
You just couldn't do a damn. And those days there were no cell phones also.
Yeah.
So if you are stuck, and then I remember my mommy used to say, hey, you go to Bombay, you're going to the Khandala Ghat, be careful. And mothers always have that thing, but that was a fear psychosis which the severity of the road condition coupled to the cars then really brought out. When the expressway happened, it was a breeze, but that in itself brought different challenges of their own, because where the old roads, the old Bombay-Pune road made you very clued in, you knew what to expect. You were the first few months on the expressway, you had this tunnel vision. you went to sleep literally because you were going at the same sort of speeds. You were droning. Yeah. So sometimes that concentration lapsed and whatnot. So early on, that sort of syndrome used to happen. But by and large, as cars got better, cars got quicker, we started appreciating the expressway. Today, the expressway is just like the old 1.5-lane Bombay-Pune road because it's traffic has, density has exponentially, what you call, mushroomed beyond.
Yes.
So, they are now doing some additional roads across over there, making another expressway, so to speak. In, I think we need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, question is, we want to do all these things, but the challenge is to do them safely. By safely, I mean, just look at when the expressway was done in Pune. The exit at the Pune end was and still is an accident spot.
Yeah.
Engineered and designed by the guys who did the roads.
That's still not got on. Tires lined up all over the side the, over there.
That happened because of me putting a big article on in Overdrive magazine when I was headed that, saying that this is a dead trap, and we had seen accidents happen right in front of our eyes. It was a dead trap spot, and so that thing was picked up by the Maratha Chamber of Commerce. I remember it was one of the Kirloskars who read that, and he got, because people, the people in power, they feel that they've done a great job. They start patting themselves on the back across over there, saying what a great job they've done. They don't understand all that great job is negated by accidents happening where they should not be scope for any accidents to happen.
True. Over the history of this country, could you call out some of the landmark projects that we've had that have really made a difference?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The Golden Quadrilateral is something. It's still work in progress at many. From there, the arterial things are going up, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the roads which are happening in the northeast of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous.
Yes.
That has been not neglected part of the country, but something where no one ventured forth instantaneously because of the lack of roads across us. So I think that's changing. That's another thing is that you look at the roads up north. You look at Leh Ladakh. Okay, there we had, it was no question that we had to get connectivity for
defense
needs. Yeah. But the BRO has done an absolutely stunning job. I was recently there in November for the Himalayan Challenge. 10 days we drove all through the Himalayas with the highest motoring, five or six of the highest motorable roads in the world. I told the BRO guys there, I met a lot of them, and I told that Major General there, I forget his name right now.
Yeah.
The BRO should be given the onus of doing roads all over the country.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
The Major General very respectfully says, Adil, don't put me in a place where I have to take orders from nincompoops. And by that, I meant the politicians.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that they'll water it down.
Yeah.
You look at the quality, not only of the road construction, but the safety measures they've put into place, etc.
The signages, the markings.
Everything. Runoff areas, parapets, etc. The gutters they have got on the near the cliffside, so some if there's a brake failure, you go down into that and it arrests the movement of the way. A lot of great scientific thought has been put across over there, and the surface quality of those roads is second to none in this country.
And the most amazing part is they've built them in some of the harshest conditions in our country.
I'm telling you, there is no, see, it is like this. There is no dearth of opportunity if you allow people to do what they are good at. But you make a show that we have got the greatest people, and then you tie both their hands behind their back and say, now get to work. That's not on. And I had a special thing about what I mentioned about the surface quality of those roads.
Yeah.
Look at the new road, the from Nagpur to Bombay.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's very well designed. Very well engineered to a great extent. But in the zeal to get it ready so quickly, you look at the surface level, surfaces, every 10 kilometer patches, it doesn't seem there are, some are good, some are indifferent. Means they're concretized, but the way the settings on those concrete laying machines is at variance to patch after patch after patch. Right. You can't have that.
Suresh was driving it, I think, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And he was telling me a lot of these expansion joints,
forget the expansion joints alone. Even the surfaces, they are rutted. See, the question is, they say the easy excuse thrown up by the road builders is, oh, we need to do this so that your braking efficiency and your braking grip. No, don't give those nonsensical. You are only, what you call, pushing the blame from your side.
Correct.
It's a blame. It's not on. So,
and it's dangerous, in fact.
Of course it is dangerous.
It's the opposite of helping
braking. Today's cars are so good that when you go on a tarmac surface, and cars love tarmac. After that, you get on the concretized thing. There are great concrete roads in Europe. We have, but they don't have that immediate rumble across there, which comes to the steering wheel and you feel in the tire noise. Why does that happen on our roads?
So what is the solution to this? How do we ensure our roads are better? Who do we hold accountable?
Mr. Gadkari is the architect of getting so many roads done. I really tip my hat off to him. At the same time, when it comes to the surface quality of the roads, I still keep my hat on and tell him to get on with it. Because he needs, he has done 90% of the work phenomenally well. If he can just get that final 10% done in that vein, trust me, he is one minister where whose roads, cars, etc. are high profile things. So I don't think his legacy should be besmirched if he just because of that lack of 10% effort over there. I think he deserves to get that thing done.
Fair enough. Let's also talk about city roads. Because
don't. Because we have animals, a species of animals known as corporators who have, they in connivance with town planners and bureaucrats and the builder lobby, have destroyed the fabric and soul of every city in the country through illogical permissions for buildings and whatnot without any due care about parking, about entry, exits, etc. They have made a mess of our cities. So I don't see, trust me, what we need is mass rapid transit systems. The metros are coming in. But there, along with that, who uses metros? Now, you have to take a thing. Everyone says, who doesn't have a car? No, I said, even those who have cars and bikes should use the metro to reduce the
congestion,
stress on our roads, get across from one place to another. But this happens not in isolation. So, at every metro station globally also, if you see, you go, the people stay in the suburbs, get on the metro, come into town, do their work and go back. But even when they stay in the suburbs and they come to the station, there are parking lots for their cars and bikes there. Yeah, there's nothing.
Exactly.
We have not thought about that. We did a metro saying because we have done a metro. Are we going to do a metro which will be beneficial across the scope of things? That is where I've, second thing across over there, metro or building anything in today's world means a fat envelope coming home to the politicians' places. I'm generalizing there because there might be some politicians who are absolutely spotlessly clean, but then I need a microscope to find them out. Key thing is this. I'll just take into account the Pune metro thing. Earlier, the Pune metro was supposed to be completely underground. And I think that should have been the case because the big companies who are mandated to do that, there's no corruption which goes across to the local corporator, this, that, etc. So there was a fight. And then from an entirely underground system, it was decided to have 2/3 overground so that the favorite builders, etc., everyone who would be there for doing the construction overground, there could be some handshakes and backslapping and whatnot across over there, and only one third was put underground. Why anyone would have thought underground was, we could have had elevated roads. Now we have what you call already destroyed that potential of having that elevated roads.
Yeah.
So what I say is, we never think about 25 years from now. We think 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. We discuss to do those 5 years from now in the seventh year. So it's already past the sell-by date. So
this is... In fact, in Pune Metro, they destroyed some elevated roads to put in the metro, like the University Circle.
How do you make money?
Construction.
Who is the money done for? Who pays the price?
We pay the price.
Exactly. So that's why I said, it's a sorry state.
Yeah.
It's a really sorry state of affairs. And everyone knows roads are the way to prosperity. But here the prosperity is only going to a very small chunk of people. Mm-hmm. Whereas everyone else who uses the roads are the people who pay the biggest price for it.
True, true. Let's wind things back. Mm. Has it always been like this in India?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not always, but to a great extent, yes. And that is because of this. We don't respect mandates. Then the voting public, we always turn, if we can get an easy ride and we can avoid a fine, we just keep quiet and do that. That lets unscrupulous people in corridors of power get away with sheer murder. And that is where the nation has paid a big price for it. I've seen in Bihar, in Uttar Pradesh, in the 70s, 80s, we had big bridges, so-called bridges, built over rivers, which were there, done on paper, ministers inaugurated it, monies have been disbursed, and there was never anything done.
Across. So you think there was no bridge at all?
Never, no. On paper, yes. It was inaugurated also by our minister. Money's also, umpteen instances like that.
Yeah.
So, that, see, delaying the Trans-Harbour Link from 1960 is as big a crime as the one which was with bridge being inaugurated, money disbursed and not being there.
Yeah.
So, it's about the degrees of crime.
Yeah.
That is what, so we can't, it makes me laugh, but it's a painful laugh, you know.
Yeah.
Because at its core, it is about where our nation could have been and how quickly it could have been there.
Yeah. I feel like my generation may not appreciate the roads as much, because from the time I can remember driving, I've always had the expressway around. I've always had the G quad around, and therefore I don't have the same amount of appreciation for the expressways as somebody like you do. And I feel like my generation also needs to step it up and hold more people accountable for whatever they're up to.
I must make mention about roads with motorsport in mind as well. From the late 50s, or rather mid 50s, the United Nations, to encourage economic growth and good neighborly prospects with a lot of countries, especially they have this ECAF thing they had going in Asia, where they wanted to connect Central Asia, winding through Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Nepal.
So modern day Grand Trunk Road.
Not just there, it would go right up to Vietnam and Laos, okay, and all that areas, you know. So they had done this thing, and that was a great initiative, which was there in a world where still there were no tensions between nations at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought was laudable, but by that time in 1948 and 62 with China, and 65 again with Pakistan, we had issues across over there. And in 1970, there was the second Asian Highway Rally, which was done. The first Asian Highway Rally was done Singapore, Laos, Vietnam, all that area. The second rally was from Tehran to Dhaka. So it started in Tehran, go to Afghanistan, come into Pakistan, come into India, go to Nepal, come back into India, then go and finish in East Pakistan. So that was the first time ever an Indian rally team won an international rally outright. So what I'm saying is, it required motorsport to exhibit that such connectivity was possible. Mm-hmm. So that was one instance. Second instance which comes to mind as to how roads open up new areas and whatnot. The original Himalayan rally from 1980 to 1990, 11 years of that event, it went into areas of the Himalayas which no one had known about. And they opened up those areas to habitation. And right now that those areas are thriving. Now the rally cannot be held because what it helped to do to open up areas are now thriving pieces of civilization there. So the Himalayan rally opened up that side of things. Another oblique means of using motor rally to pursue one's commercial interests or whatever. It was there were two rounds of the Asia Pacific Rally Championship which were held in Pune in the early 2000s. And the government in its so-called largesse towards the sport helped in getting roads carved out through those areas. It was only later on we came to know that those roads became approach roads to Lhasa. Hmm. So you can see this join two and two and make up 10, you know.
Yeah.
So, but by and large, the way roads have been made and also roads which were there have been neglected is something which we can learn from many of our authorities.
Yeah.
There is one road just outside of Pune. It goes to a fort of the Peshwa era, Pratapgarh. There was a road, motorable road, built by the British in the late 1800s. And it was in existence till after independence. But then after that, we just forgot about that road.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go there on our 4x4 cars. Now there is no vestige of tarmac at all on the roads. It's rutted, there are grasses grown. But you can see the marker blocks across over there. Pratapgarh 2 kilometers, 7 kilometers, 8 kilometers.
It still exists.
Those markers, milestones still exist.
Wow.
But the road's gone off.
Yeah.
And it's a phenomenal road. It's a phenomenal road. So it's not for the faint-hearted. You need to be having a proper car to go up there. A 4x4 helps. Mm-hmm. And whatnot. So you can't neglect roads like that as well, you know.
Yeah.
So there is a zeal to do great roads, mm-hmm. wonderful. The zeal to do great roads, really great, that's doubt. There's a lot of doubt in that area. And that's where I feel we only take delight. So we have connected Bombay via the ceiling to Panvel. Wonderful job we have done. We are patting ourselves.
Yeah.
Don't do that, guys. Do it completely and do it as a matter of public good.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it to what you call make yourself feel you are great.
One more thing I wanted to bring up when you mentioned commercial interests is the topic of toll.
Mm.
Now, we have toll across on most of these new roads, these expressways, these highways. Mm. What is the concept of toll?
See,
why does it exist?
Yes, it's a very valid thing. You know, in let's talk about registering and road tax here in India, as well as registering and road tax abroad. There's no road tax abroad. There's only registering of a vehicle.
Yeah.
Because there was no road tax there, they had tolls.
They had toll roads.
Here, we have road tax. We have tolls, and if you are not careful, you'll have more tolls and more tax. That is unfortunately the key thing across.
Yeah.
And that's been picked up so wrongly, you know. And you either have tolls or you don't have that amount of road tax. Given our structures, there is a certain thing which is there administered from the center, then each state is free to do its own rulings on road tax and whatnot. So that is where there is tremendous duplicity of financial burdens on the motorist. And by and large, any which way, the motorist is the favorite whipping horse of every dispensation in this land.
Yeah.
And we are a meek lot because we want to get on with life. The government knows that.
Yeah.
Then they'll keep on whipping us more and we'll keep on paying up because we cannot be bothered. Unless and until there is revolution in the minds and it is transferred into no one wanting to pay tax, which I think is not possible in a land like ours.
Yeah.
But yes, so there has got to be rational. It's gone out of hand, you know. It's gone out of hand. Yeah. The government is... Okay, one more thing about tolls. Just look at this new FASTag system.
Yeah.
It's one of the most shoddily executed systems out there when you come to a toll gate. For every one great toll gate, I will give you 99 lousily...
I had one such experience yesterday where it took them 20 minutes to figure out how to cut the toll from my FASTag.
Well, you are lucky. It's only 20 minutes. So that's what I meant. And then now the government says, okay, your thing toll will be done by satellite. I hope that the satellite glitch doesn't, what you call, automatically give a signal to my car to shut it off because I have not paid.
Yeah.
Which is not my fault. So I'm telling you, they could be using Big Brother is watching you tactics, but it's unless and until they have not perfected it, I don't think that they should, what you call, ram through anything.
True. A lot of conversations happen around speed on roads. And they say speed is the culprit for accidents. What's your opinion on this?
No, sir. Many a time I've seen on fast express, there are not great many accidents on the autobahns and autostradas and whatnot in Europe and all that. Because going slow on a autostrada is far more dangerous than adhering to the 120 or 140 kilometer limits across over there. That is where, that's also a consonance of good driver training, legislation, licensing, etc. Here, on expressways, 100 kilometers per hour is okay, but I think 120 would be better. But more than that, I still feel we don't administer our traffic enforcement rules very well. Trucks have to embrace the left lane. You have three trucks in all three lanes trying to have a battle of wits to pass each other.
Yeah.
And those that battle of wits carries on for 10, 15 minutes. That's not on. Yeah. That's just not on. Then you have got, they say, lane discipline. That skewed thought about lane discipline. So that man in a Maruti 800 doddering around at 60 kilometers per hour in the fast lane, he says he's maintaining lane discipline.
Yeah.
No, that's not lane discipline. That's lane indiscipline and stupid. A moron is driving like that. But you have so many such instances which happen on our road. And our traffic enforcement leaves a lot to be desired. You'll have traffic enforcement at a place round a corner with a traffic gun. Rather than what you call driving. Because he might have just accelerated to pass someone and he's caught out across over there. So, question is, if we can, what you call, enforce discipline across the board.
Yeah.
Speed has never been an issue. It's a issue has always been lack of skills behind the wheel. No anticipation.
Yeah.
Might is right. Plus that one inherent thing in 99.9% of 1.4 billion populace. We Indians are in a tearing hurry to go nowhere fast. This very is well the thing. So this is it.
Perfect. And I think on that bombshell, we can end this podcast about roads. It's been really insightful, Adil. So I think all of us have learned a lot today. A lot of context around the infrastructure that we just take for granted today. So thank you for joining us today.
Wonderful.
And hopefully see you on the podcast again soon.
Yes, we'll do that.